Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
On the road again, something on the road again. Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast. I'm your host, Catholic Answers apologist and speaker, Trent Horn. On Tuesdays and Thursdays, we talk apologetics, theology, how to explain and defend our Catholic faith. But on Fridays on the Council of Trent podcast, we just get to have fun. We talk about whatever I find to be interesting and fascinating. And I've been thinking of different ideas when I do Free for All Friday. Trent, where do you get all these ideas to just free for all concepts? Usually they come to me from personal life. You think about people who write books or articles, usually they write on things that happen to them in their personal experiences. And so I just did a Free for All Friday last week on tips for buying and selling a home. Actually, I did have a few realtors reach out to me. One of them said they liked the episode so much, they're going to have their clients listen to it before they go out to buy or sell their home. And you know what's great about that? So one of the reasons I do Free for All Friday, it's not just to have fun, which I love having fun. Don't you like having fun at the end of the week? 2020 stole our fun. You stole my fun, 2020. I want it back with interest in 2021. Watch, 2021 is going to be like, oh man, do you remember 2020? Such good times, right? So it's not just for fun. These episodes, I think a lot of times can serve the role of pre-evangelization, that when you want to help people to understand the gospel, sometimes you got to give people kind of a gradual slope up to it. And so sometimes a lot of these episodes, when I talk about things that are fun and also share my faith in them, you can share them with anybody, even if they're not religious. If you have a non-religious friend who is thinking of buying or selling their home, send them that podcast episode. And I also mentioned how my faith factored into choosing my home. And it's, you know, it's about being gradual. It's about meeting people where they're at. St. Paul in his letter to the Corinthians, I think it's in 1 Corinthians chapter 9, he says, you know, to the Greeks, I became a Greek. To the Jew, I became a Jew. To the strong, I became strong. To the weak, I became weak. I become all things to all men so that some might be saved. That's what St. Paul said. So we meet people where they're at. And on Fridays, we can do that. And other times, though, it's just nice to have fun. It's just good to unwind a little bit. So here's what I wanted to talk about today. I want to talk about tourist traps. I've been doing a lot of driving. We caravanned our family out of California. So we sold our home, packed everything up into the pods. The pods are taken away. We drove away from our house. Our neighbors waved goodbye. My wife burst into tears. I got a little misty. We're gonna miss them. We began our journey. We went up to Orange County to stay with a friend there because we had 2 weeks where we didn't have anywhere to stay. Our home didn't close for two. Our new home in Texas wasn't going to close. Went and stayed with some wonderful friends in Orange County, California. Then made it over to stay with friends in Phoenix, Arizona. Got to see my parents, social distance and all that, but they got to at least see the kiddos, and that's wonderful for them to be able to see. And then we continued on the journey to New Mexico. Then I flew ahead. I drove ahead. Sorry, we caravanned. Had our van and my Corolla, caravanning along, going along the highway, driving along. And then I continued the drive by myself. It was about 1,500 miles, the route we took from San Diego to Dallas, Texas. But along the way are tourist traps. And I really wanted to stop at all of them. I wanted to stop at all of them. But I wasn't able to this time around because we have three little kids and we just got to go, especially Mr. John Paul. I love Mr. John Paul, but he hates being in his car seat, especially when you get to about the fifth or the sixth hour. He's like, he just wants out. And my wife, the saint of the family, she drove the van. I asked her, do you want me to drive the van? She said, I like the kids' company. And she, my saintly wife, drove the van with the kiddos, even when John Paul is screaming his head off at the end. So it was more like we just got to get to go and get to the place we're going. But there's so many little tourist traps and stop-offs along the way. I've been to some of them. Others I've been dying to go to. So in this episode, I want to talk to you about some of those tourist traps. A lot of them are along the routes that I've taken here in the Southwest. But I'll talk about one that's back east. And you might know others. I'd love for you to add them. Go to TrenthornPodcast.com if you're a premium subscriber. Not only do you get access to bonus content like my new catechism study series, every Monday, 8 a.m., it's uploaded. Check it out if you're a premium subscriber. Open mailbag episodes. You can submit questions, comments, messages. I would love to hear from you. What are your favorite tourist traps, roadside attractions you love to go to. But I haven't gotten to go to them. So I'm hoping maybe when Matthew gets a little bit older, if we do a cross-country trip, maybe if it's just him and I, we'll stop at all of these places and be able to do that. It's hard with the kids. So it's like when they're really little, right? When they're babies and you're driving. Have you ever done a cross-country trip with kids? With adults, it's just a lot of fun. With kids, when they're babies, what's hard is you got to pull over all the time to feed them. And so that's always rough, but at least they go to the bathroom in their diaper. Then when they get older, it's like, sweet, they can at least eat food in their little car seat. You don't have to worry about that. But then it's the bathroom stops. Oh man, do I dread the bathroom stops. Because you go and it's like, do you go to the rest area? You go to the rest area with the stainless steel toilet that hasn't been cleaned since, you know, 1848. It's just like, oh gosh, do we have to go there? Sometimes the kids are in an absolute panic. I gotta go. Have you been in that situation? I have with the kids. And then what do? You just pick the next exit. Doesn't matter if it's just Service Road 2A149 to the nuclear power plant and there's nothing there. You pull off the freeway. I look around to see if there's any police because there's going to be a highway patrolman. And if they see this, they're going to be the one who's a stickler and gives me a ticket. But I'm like, come on. If there's no place to stop and the kid's got to go, you open the door, you get the kid out, and he goes. Now, I have boys, so it's easier. It's easier when you have boys. And you go, you keep an eye out. I remember one of the kids, I felt so bad one time we had to do this. And the kids were like, it's cold and it's windy. And I'm like, okay. Not in the wind. And you just go and do that, you know. But a lot of times, though, they're older, so they can make it. You try to find a decent restaurant, a decent truck stop, like says an indoor bathroom that isn't totally creepy or grody. But you don't want to stop anywhere else. You want to just get going. But that's not today. We're gonna stop at the tourist traps along the way. I want to talk about here on today's episode of the podcast. So if you go to Wikipedia, actually, there's a list of the largest roadside attractions. And so these things, and I call them tourist traps. It's like, what's the difference between a tourist trap and a tourist stop? Because some places, you know, you stop at, it's an actual place of historical significance. And that's the key. So some places you stop at, it's like, wow, this is really cool. This is where important event X happened. But other times, it's just something that, it's a tourist trap if it was created just for the sake of getting people to stop and buy stuff. That's when it becomes a tourist trap, in my opinion. If it has no cultural or historical significance or value. Like, for example, in Arizona, you go along I-10 at Picacho Peak. That's the site of the most Western battle in the Civil War. I'm like, that's kind of cool. That's an interesting thing to go and see and to go and look at. There's also a really cool ostrich farm that's there if you want to go and check that out. And I would say that's not necessarily a tourist trap per se. But other things, like, for example, the bottle. Built in 1924, this is in Alabama. It's like the world's largest Coke bottle. Known as the Knee-High Inn, was one of the first world's largest roadside attraction. Despite it being built, destroyed by fire in 1933, the community around it, The Bottle, Alabama, still bears the name of this attraction. And you go through the list, there's all kinds of world's largest and just created to sucker you in to stop and buy souvenirs, tchotchkes. California's got the world's largest hammer in Eureka, world's tallest thermometer in Baker, California. You go to Illinois, the world's largest ketchup bottle in Collinsville. The world's largest ball of twine, Cocker City, Kansas. And so you know, it's one of these places that I've never heard of before. The world's largest lug nut in Lansing. You got to get a really big lug nut. Minnesota has got a bunch of these things. World's largest Iron Man, Jolly Green Giant in Blue Earth, Minnesota. It just doesn't end. The largest fork, 35 feet tall, weighs 11 tons in Springfield, Missouri. Those are tourist traps if I've ever heard of one. If you want to see one near you, go to Wikipedia. There's a list of the largest roadside attractions. You can check that out. Now, what I'm going to go through now is talk about tourist traps that are more the traditional ones. For example, my favorite are the tourist traps where they have signs on the highway that it's like 300 miles to this, 200 miles to this, 100 miles to this, 50 miles to this. And if you've been driving cross country, you're like, oh, I already saw 8 billboards. I really got to go and see it. And one of the biggest offender of this is The Thing. I'm going to tell you what The Thing is. I will give you a spoiler warning if you want to skip ahead a minute in the podcast to, you know, keep your curiosity. because it's the internet, I know what these things are. I've never had the opportunity to stop at the thing, but I would like to. I have driven by it countless times because it's on I-10 outside of Tucson. It's on the route between El Paso, Texas, and Tucson, Arizona. So I've passed this thing numerous times. So the thing, aka the Thing Museum, is an Arizona roadside attraction hyped by signs along Interstate 10 between El Paso, Texas, and Tucson, Arizona. It's located at exit 322 on a hilltop between Benson and Wilcox. You know, it's funny, actually. That was a bathroom emergency we had. We stopped. The kids were like, they gotta go. So we stopped at a rest area. We're like, okay, we'll stop. And we did the Grody rest area. It's like, oh, okay. We get back in the car. We start driving. A mile later was the thing, which has a Dairy Queen. It has amenities. I'm like, oh, we should have just pulled over at the thing. But we didn't. So the thing, it's like, what is the thing? You're like, what's the thing? I will now tell you what the thing is. Skip ahead a minute or two if you don't want to hear it. It's supposed to be a mummified mother and child. So it's supposed to be like a mummy, basically, of a mother and child. Don't know where it came from or where it's from, but it's a mummy. That's all it is. You go, you look at it, you pay a couple bucks, and you go out, you go to the gift shop, and you get a bunch of stuff. However, my favorite thing at the Thing Museum, I've never been there, but I know it's there by reading travel reports, is there's the mummy, but my favorite thing about the thing is probably not the mummy. It's Hitler's car. There's a car there, and it's like an old, I forget if it's a Model T or whatever. It's just, you know, it's an old German car, and the sign says, "This might have been Hitler's car." I love the honesty. It might have been Hitler's car. You never know. And it's there at the Thing Museum. So you can go and check that out. Even if you know what it is, it still could be fun. I still want to go. I want to do eventually a tourist trap roadside trip, maybe with my oldest son. And we will stop at the thing and then get an ice cream at Dairy Queen. The next one is the Big Texan Steak Ranch. So here's another tourist trap to get sucked into if you're going through Amarillo, Texas, which is up in the Texas Panhandle. So if you're going between like Albuquerque and Oklahoma, you'll probably pass by the Big Texan Steak Ranch. It's a restaurant started in 1960. It's a steakhouse. And so what they have there is the 72-ounce steak challenge. So you can get a free steak if you can eat the whole meal. So here's how the challenge works. 4.5 pounds of steak. The steak is free to anyone who, in 1 hour or less, can eat the entire meal, which is a 4.5 pound steak, a bread roll with butter, a baked potato, a shrimp cocktail, and a salad. And the meal costs $72. So you go in there. If you can finish it in an hour, you get the meal for free. You don't get the free trip to the hospital afterwards if you need a treatment for, you know, heart disease or something, but you do get it. It says here, to date, over 9,800 people out of 68,000 have accomplished it. So what are the odds? So out of 68,000 people, 9,800, what would that be, like 15% or something? Like about 15%, one out of seven people can do the Big Texas Steak Challenge, 72-ounce steak. Maybe if I was a younger man, I'd be able to do that. The record for eating it in the fastest amount of time is Molly Schuler, who polished off the meal in 4 minutes, 58 seconds, and came back for seconds. In 15 minutes, she ate two of these things. That's not right. That's not natural. So I'll have to do a whole episode on, or at least I should cover in a future episode, competitive eating. I have conflicting thoughts about competitive eating. It's hard for me to root on competitive eating when I know people are starving in other parts of the world. I don't think it's good, but I haven't fully thought out my thoughts on the issue. But I used to think competitive eating was the coolest thing ever. Now I'm like, oh, I don't know if it's super cool to do that when people have food insecurity in other parts of the world. All right, here's the next one. Breezewood, Pennsylvania. The entire city of Breezewood, Pennsylvania itself is a tourist trap. So it says here, Breezewood has been labeled a tourist trap and a choke point because traffic between I-70 and the Pennsylvania Turnpike is routed along surface streets. If you want to get between Interstate 70 in Pennsylvania and the Pennsylvania Turnpike, the only way to get between the two, it's not a high-speed route to get you between the two. It's purposely designed so that it says here, you have to go along surface streets lined with gas stations, hotels, restaurants, traffic lights, rather than a direct freeway to freeway junction. This segment of Interstate 70 is one of the few parts of the interstate highway system which is not a controlled access highway. So it's a part of the interstate, but it's got stoplights. It's got other, you know, other ways to turn off. It's not a controlled access highway, you know, that's separated from other main roads. And it does that to be a tourist trap, basically. There's a great article about it at Bloomberg City Lab, what internet memes get wrong about Breezewood, Pennsylvania. Because there's a famous picture of Breezewood. You go online and you look at it, and it's like, what's wrong with America? And it's actually, it's a really interesting picture of Breezewood. It's a really small town that employs everybody in kind of like this kind of tourist trap environment. But the picture shows the main street, and it's just crowded with gas stations, McDonald's, restaurants, a Shell. Like, you look at the picture and all of the signs start to fade into one another, into the background. It's almost hypnotic. Look up picture Breezewood, Pennsylvania, and you'll see what I mean by it. And it's supposed to be like, look at America. It's like, well, not every American city looks like this. This is just because Breezewood is a tourist trap. So if you're ever going out in Breezewood, go and check that out. If you want a real trap in Pennsylvania, go to Centralia. Centralia, Pennsylvania is where they have an active coal mine fire that will not extinguish itself for like 200 years. So nobody, like a few diehards live there, but the postal service revoked the zip code for the area. It's like uninhabitable. So remember, though, from previous episodes, I've said to you that when it comes to travel, don't leave the interstate. You ever see that movie, The Hills Have Eyes, about the mutants that get people? Here's the rule, people. Don't leave the interstate. Just stay on the interstate. It's when people, it's the horror movie always starts with, there's a great shortcut here to get off the interstate. It's only funny in National Lampoon's Vacation when Chevy Chase does it, gets lost in the desert. Remember that he has to pay like $500 for four new ball tires that are terrible. So, wow, I cut through a lot of movie references just right in that one point. Here are the next tourist traps. These next three are in the Southwest, so I've driven by these countless times. I've only stopped at one of them, the last one I'll discuss. But the other two I've always wanted to stop at, I haven't been able to stop at yet. The first one is the Museum of History in Granite, Arizona. I drive by this all the time on Interstate 8 between San Diego and Phoenix. So if you know someone in Phoenix, their favorite thing to do is on a weekend in July or August, drive to San Diego. When you can't take the heat in Phoenix anymore, I think this year Phoenix had like 60 days of temperatures over 110 degrees. Can't do that anymore. It's even too hot for me, and I grew up there. I lived there from junior high to graduating Arizona State University, and that is just too hot for me now, especially with kids. But they love driving. I knew when I lived in San Diego, we would always do this. As young people, as college students, you would drive Friday night through the night. Saturday, you'd be at the beach. Saturday night, you crash at a friend's house. Sunday, go to church, go to the beach again, drive back. Phoenix people love that with San Diego. So you go along I-8 and you pass Granite and you look off the side, you look up north after you go through Yuma, Arizona, at the end of the border, and you're on your way. It's not in Arizona. It's in Felicity, California, but it's right by Yuma. It's right by the border. Like when you're driving from San Diego to Phoenix, like I do, it's like, oh, I'm almost near Arizona. So it says here the museum, this is not a Museum of Granite History. It's the city Museum of History in Granite in the town of Felicity, California. They call it Granite because the museum exhibits are monuments. They're made from Missouri red granite. Each one is 100 feet long, and it's supposed to be like a historic record of humanity that would like survive a nuclear holocaust. So it's kind of like the Georgia Guidestones that we talked about in that episode with Jimmy a few months ago. You drive by, it looks like a weird area. There's a pyramid. There's a spiral staircase to nowhere. It looks pretty new agey and kind of weird. But you go, there's these huge outdoor panels with the history of humanity on them. And there are only 31% of the panels have been engraved. So it's like, hey, if you want to learn about human beings after the nuclear holocaust, to learn how to live, I guess you're supposed to go to the Georgia Guidestones that have like the new commandments for people. More about that, go to Mysteries of the American South, a previous Free for All Friday. Jimmy and I talk about it more there. But if you want to just read about human history and all the libraries were destroyed in the nuclear blast, go to the Museum of Human History in Granite. Here's our next tourist trap from the Southwest, the Arizona Plain Boneyards. I love these things. These are on Interstate 10. When you leave Phoenix going to Tucson, you drive down I-10 and they have the boneyards. And they only really have these in the Southwest. So it says here, what is an aircraft boneyard? An aircraft boneyard or aircraft graveyard is a storage area for aircraft that are retired from service. Most aircraft at boneyards are either kept for storage with some maintenance or have their parts removed for reuse or resale and are then scrapped. Boneyard facilities are generally located in deserts, such as those in the southwestern United States, since the dry conditions reduce corrosion and the hard ground does not need to be paved. So you don't want to put it on softer. You don't want the airplanes slowly sinking into the mud. And you don't want it to be a humid place where they're just going to totally turn into rust buckets. So it's out there on the road between I-10. And there's multiple boneyards, and you can visit, I think, some of them. The 309th Aerospace Maintenance and Regeneration Group in Tucson, Arizona, is the largest facility, simply known as the Boneyard. But there's one you can see from the freeway if you look out. If you're on I-10 between Phoenix and Tucson, you look out, you see just planes. It's probably, I don't know, 5-6 miles away from the freeway, but you could see them. You just see hundreds of airplanes just parked in the middle of the desert. You see their rudders and the wings, and they're just parked out there. And it's just the weirdest kind of surreal sight. But I've always wanted to go and just see that because my kids love planes. And in San Diego, actually, they had a museum dedicated to old aircraft, like fighter pilots and like fighter jets and helicopters and old biplanes. And I would take my kids there to this, and they would get into the cockpits of these things. They would love to get in, pretend to fly them, and they just had a ton of fun. And walking by them and seeing like these huge machines, like to go to a boneyard and see all these 747s lined up and 777s and 37s, would just be great to do. So if you have a chance in the desert, going to Arizona in the south, check out the boneyards. Also, if you're in Tucson, what is it? I think it's called Mount Lemmon. You can go there all the way up to the top of Mount Lemmon, drive all the way up to the top of it. It gets very cold up there. There's a little spot there that has good pie if you're willing to wait a long time. I found the customer service to be not that great the last time I was there. And let's talk about the last tourist trap. The last one are the Cabazon dinosaurs. This one, we almost got to go. I wanted to go to the Cabazon dinosaurs. And I said to Laura, we called her on the phone. I said, hey, we got to pull over for gas soon or to get the kids food. There's a Wendy's. I can always count on Wendy's and the nuggets. Here's my hot take. Wendy's has the best nuggets. I got three small kids. I got to know where the nuggets are. When COVID-19 hit and the grocery stores were raided, I'm like, we're okay. I go to the frozen food section. The nuggets are gone. I thought my kids were going to starve to death. I bought a chest freezer later that week, stocked it up with nuggets. We'll be good till doomsday, my friend. So we got to go get the kids some lunch, fast food, get them nuggets, get on the road. And so I thought, well, there's a Burger King there. It's passable. They got the chicken fries. But I told Laura, it's Cabazon. That's where the dinosaurs are. And the kids could stop and see the dinosaurs. But there was, but we didn't stop there because we wanted to just keep rolling. John Paul was crying. We got stuck in traffic. LA, right? It's LA. It was Black Friday. Who's on the road? Why would anybody be on the road? Why is anyone going to work? It's Black Friday, day after Thanksgiving. And yet we still end up getting stuck in traffic. Because it's Los Angeles. What are you going to do? Well, we were passing like Riverside. But I was like, oh, I want to go. But the kids were falling apart. So we just blasted by it, went to a reliable Wendy's and got the kids their food. But I've always loved this tourist trap. I've been there myself. When my parents used to drive us when we were like high schoolers to visit California, we would take I-10 rather than I-8. So my parents had this old caravan. Old Dodge Caravan, and they were worried it wouldn't get through the mountains. They're worried it wouldn't. You know those signs on the freeway, turn off air conditioning to avoid overheating next 10 miles and you go up a mountain road? We did that. We did that and prayed the car wouldn't overheat. And so they took a longer route from Phoenix to San Diego. Instead of going south through Yuma to go up the mountains outside San Diego by Julian, they went through I-10 through Riverside, California and Anaheim and down the coast to San Diego. So a little longer, but you didn't go up kind of the big mountains, the steep mountain pass. And so when they did that, we drove by first the General Patton Museum on the I-10. That's where you can see all the old tanks dedicated to General Patton from World War II. You don't win wars dying for your country. You win wars getting the other guy to die for his country. Patton, just very quotable individual. Then at Cabazon, you go, when I went there, there used to be a Denny's. I don't know if there's a Denny's there anymore, but there's a Burger King. And there's these two big dinosaurs that were constructed there. It says here, the Cabazon dinosaurs, formerly Claude Bell's dinosaurs, is a roadside attraction in Cabazon, California, featuring two enormous steel and concrete dinosaurs named Denny the Dinosaur and Mr. Rex. Located just west of Palm Springs, the 150-foot long Brontosaurus and the 65-foot tall Tyrannosaurus are visible from travelers on Southern California's Interstate 10. And so I've been there in person and seen them. That was a big memory as a kid. But I also love it because, as the article goes on to say, the roadside dinosaurs are best known for their appearance in the film Pee-wee's Big Adventure. Sculptor and theme park artist Claude Bell began construction of the dinosaurs in 1964 with the goal of attracting more customers to his nearby restaurant, The Wheel Inn, which closed, I think, in 2013. Bell died in 1988, the age of 91. His family sold the property in the mid-90s, which has been the site of the dinosaurs and a creationist museum, of all things. The movie, it's also featured in the song Tears for Fears and in the movie The Wizard. So that's right, because it was in The Wizard, about the movie where they go to California to try to win the video game tournament. The Fred Savage, the kid from Wonder Years, tries to take his autistic brother to go win this tournament. So it's basically Rain Man, but with kids and Super Nintendo. California Wizard, an awesome movie, another very quotable movie. I love to Power Glove. And the dinosaurs are in there. They have a touching scene at the Cabazon dinosaurs. And it's also in Pee-wee's Big Adventure. And a lot of people thought that the dinosaurs were built for the movie, for Pee-wee's Big Adventure. But then people realized, no, it's just it's an existing roadside attraction. So I have a bit of a sentimental attraction to the Cabazon dinosaurs, because as a kid growing up, Pee-wee's Big Adventure was one of my favorite movies. But now, as I've gotten older and know the legal troubles Paul Rubin has got in, when I see the movie again, I see it in a different light, especially when Pee-wee says to the girl in the movie, I think her name's Dottie.
Dottie, there's things about me you wouldn't understand. Things you couldn't understand. Things you shouldn't understand.
I'm like, Pee-wee Herman. Yeah, it probably is. Hey, that was a lot of fun. I hope you enjoyed my brief tour of these tourist traps. I bet you there's a tourist trap that you love that I didn't mention in this episode. If you'd love to add that to a comment with our other members of our community at trendhornpodcast.com, go ahead and become a premium subscriber there. You get access to bonus content, the ability to message me, to pitch ideas for episodes, to submit questions for our open mailbag, and you get access to my new Catechism Study Series. 30-minute video lectures debut every week, Monday at 8 a.m. We're going to go through the whole catechism. I think you'll enjoy that. If you would like access to that for your high school students, enroll them in the course at homeschoolconnections.com. Go there, look at my courses by Trent Horn. I think you'll certainly enjoy that because there you get access to the quizzes, the live Q&A sessions, recordings of Q&A sessions with me. You don't want to miss that. Thank you all so much. Pray for us as we get settled into our new home here in Texas, in the great state of Texas. And I hope you all have a very blessed weekend.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit TrentHornPodcast.com.